You're listening to the ANA Podcast Network, powered by Audacy, a leading multi-platform audio content and entertainment company. Listen on the Audacy app.
Hello and welcome to the Marketing Futures Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Burbridge. Over the years, we here at the pod have talked a lot, and I do mean a lot, about how marketers need to brush up on their technical literacy as more and more of the marketing function becomes digitized. But what about the other way around? Are there ways engineers could benefit from thinking like a marketer? The answer, according to our guest this week, is a resounding yes. Chris Stauffer founded his own agency in the year 2000 after years of playing a key role in helping some major brands take their first leap into the digital world. Chris and I discuss the art of balancing an engineer mindset with a branding one and what your brand needs to consider before you even think of integrating AI into your organization. Everyone, we are back in the ANA Marketing Futures virtual podcast studio. It is a sunny Friday here in podcast world, and I am very, very excited to welcome my guest today, Chris Stauffer, the founder and CEO of Stauffer. Chris, thank you so, so much for taking some time to chat with us today.
Good morning, Michael. Happy to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So before we start jumping in, because we're talking about what everybody is talking about right now, the kind of rise of technology, particularly AI, how it's affecting marketing behind the scenes and in front of the consumer. But before we get started, let's set a little baseline with our listeners. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how your journey led you to found your own agency in the year 2000?
That sounds great. Awesome. Well, back in 1999, I started my career at Deloitte Consulting, where I was extremely fortunate to basically be in the right place at the right time. Up in Portland, Oregon, I was sitting in my cube one day, and the guy sitting next to me leaned over and said, "Hey, Chris, how'd you like to help me sell a web project?" And at the time, Deloitte had never actually done that professionally.
Wow.
So I was fortunate enough to be on Deloitte's first ever web team that they actually built a website for a client, which really, really, really did just help kind of catapult my career. So when I was at Deloitte, after launching that first site, myself and a couple of others got to help define Deloitte's web methodology. And we were right in the middle of the peak of the dot-com boom. And I had a headhunter call me up and offer to bring me down to Toshiba America down in Irvine. And that was actually what kicked off me incorporating and starting the firm. That was my first client down in Orange County, California. That's how I ended up down here. So there, I was fortunate enough to get to architect about six different websites across the gamut, business to business, business to consumer, so on and so forth. After that, I continued hopping around pretty much as like a freelance consultant for the first few years, where I was an architect at Nestle. I got to do their internet frame or global internet framework.
Man.
Did some work over it. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Nestle project was a fun one. We ended up launching about 185 different websites, all based on the same code base. It's pretty much every single country in the world. As you obviously know, Nestle's pretty much everywhere. So that was a lot of fun. Really, really, really good project for my career. I learned a whole lot on that one. After that, moved over, went to Sony Connect, where I got to work a little bit in the music industry for a while. From there, moved on to Lexus, where I got to do a project with Team One, where we actually won a Silver Clio for a project we did there. That was a lot of fun. And then after that, had a really, really big career transition for me. So I got recruited to go over and work at InfoSpace Mobile. So a lot of people don't know what InfoSpace is or was, but they basically managed to run pretty much the entire ringtone industry. And I didn't really realize that when I took the job. And it was just a crazy wild ride. And I worked with a gentleman there named Ed Cerruti, where we basically got to run all the engineering aspects of the ringtone industry for about 2 years. It was honestly one of the most fun experiences of my life. You know, there was about 50 people, you know, that worked in that office here in LA. And somehow we generated around $275 million a year in revenue, which is like 50 people. It was honestly one of the most exhilarating experiences of my life.
I can believe it. Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh yeah, it was completely nuts. I mean, I will never forget sitting in my cube one day working on the American Idol ringtone store, and we actually generated $20 million in an hour, which—
Good Lord.
Yeah, it was quite possibly the most stressed out I've ever been in my life as far as like getting her done really, really fast. But that experience at InfoSpace was really kind of what created, I'm going to call it the second birth of the firm. Because that was really where I realized, even though I had incorporated all the way back in 2000, I'd had a couple contractors here and there work for me, but you know, it was pretty much a freelancer. But after InfoSpace, that was when I hired my first employee, Oscar Gutierrez, who's still actually with me to this day. He literally sits awesome. Right on the other side of that wall, you know, back
That's
behind
amazing.
Me. Yeah, Oscar's a great guy. And brought him on. You know, admittedly, in the beginning, it was pretty rough. You know, I'd never really learned how to sell anybody anything. So it was just kind of this weird evolution. I mean, I was trying to get deals from anywhere I could, you know, doing websites off Craigslist, you know, all sorts of, you know, crazy young entrepreneur stuff. Then I had a really interesting idea. I started thinking back in my career about how I'd gotten a lot of my projects. And what I realized is that they pretty much all came through marketing agencies. So I thought, you know, maybe it would be a good sales strategy for me to go out and actually start targeting marketing agencies, because they were the ones that were really controlling all the web budgets out there.
Mm-hmm.
So for a period of probably about 6 years, I worked as a subcontractor for a whole bunch of different marketing and branding agencies. And I was generally speaking the only techie in the room. You know, at the time it was, you know, the marketing strategist, the copywriter, you know, your usual suspects, you know, in those strategy sessions. And I would be the lone programmer or the lone engineer in the room. And it was just a very transformative place for me, because that's really where I learned really how to be a marketer.
Mm.
You know, there were a lot of different men and women that I worked with that I owe a lot of respect to. A gentleman named Barrett Reef Morris, another guy, Jose Caballer. Yeah. And the list goes on of all these different folks that really just, you know, took a good attention to mentoring me. And, you know, during that period, I started meeting a lot more marketing people. And that actually, that experience is really where I managed to get a lot of the contacts of the folks that actually work with me today. From there, we just built out the team. And, you know, lately, some of my clients include, you know, the California Science Center, the Screen Actors Guild, Berkeley, USC, SpaceX, University of Chicago. And yeah, it's pretty much been off to the races ever since.
That is wild. I mean, we've had the good fortune of bringing on a few people that I could say had a front row seat to when the internet was starting to really explode and fragment, but to have somebody who's like, oh no, I built that corner of when of that explosion and that disruption. And I just remember having a Jay-Z song as a ringtone and thinking that was the coolest thing. And I have to imagine that you are partially responsible for that little micro moment of coolness in my life. So thank you, Chris, personally.
Yeah, there might be a little bit of truth to that. I'll never forget that that ringtone 50 Cent in the club. You know,
oh,
we used
yeah.
to joke about how that was the track that built Moviso. I think he sold something like $150 million of one song.
That is not shocking. That is absolutely not shocking. So being that you have such a unique body of experience in both technology and marketing, I wanted to get your take on a couple of things of the intersection of those two worlds. We talk a lot about bringing data and tech understanding and talent into the marketing function, but we don't talk as much the reverse of that. What are the skills that you feel that tech companies need to bring in to ensure that their products and services are relevant to consumers?
Well, I really think the biggest thing that I was taught was really almost more in the product management realm and really understanding how to build out products that are relevant to the consumers. And, you know, really the methodology that I was taught that I teach everyone, you know, in the firm and, you know, pretty much every one of my clients as well, is we always start off every single project that we work on by trying to address what the company's goals are for a project and really beginning to get them to understand, you know, what are the things that they're trying to accomplish. But as soon as you finish that, and this is where it gets, you know, a lot more into the marketing realm, is really beginning to understand who that target audience is. And that's something that I've found that a lot of technical people and a lot of the engineers that I work with don't necessarily understand out of the gate. Because a lot of the times they're like, you know, some of the smartest guys in the room, but at the same time, you know, they're very fixated on what the technology can do and, you know, really driving that the tech forward. When in reality, what we have to do is we have to get those techies to kind of flip their thinking process and begin to understand it's not about what I care about. It's really figuring out who those target audience personas are and beginning to understand what that customer actually wants. And as soon as we've identified those target personas, is really, you know, kind of empathizing and getting in to that target customer's head and thinking to yourself, what exactly does my customer care about? So when my customer's interacting with this application or the system that I'm engineering, what's in it for them? You know, why are they here? You know, what are the things that make me happy, you know, as your customer? What are the things that are going to anger me as your customer? And really just kind of getting into their head and just really, really trying to empathize and just get where they're coming from. And then the system that we're going to build, that's going to be that intersection between those target customer goals and the actual company's goals. Because if it doesn't work for the company, why are we doing it?
Right, right.
And if it doesn't work for the customer, well, then they're not going to do it.
Right. Yeah.
They're just going to fail.
Doing it? Right.
Yeah. They're not, you're never going to keep them. Like, you know, I mean, people innately are just selfish and they care about what's in it for them. And if you don't really kind of get in their head and figure out what's in it for them, no one's going to care about your product at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would you say that is kind of like the cultural North Star of like when you're trying to balance that engineer mindset and a branding mindset to just kind of get out of your own head and get into the customers?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, without any question whatsoever, you know, and a lot of clients that we work with, when we go talk to them, you know, they'll list out in an RFP or something like that, like all of their goals and what they're trying to accomplish and everything like that. And you're like, oh yeah, great. But like, what about the user? Like, I get mm-hmm. what you're trying yeah. to do. Like that totally right. makes sense. But we really need to just kind of get in that head of the person that's going to use it, you know? And if you don't do that, it just never, ever actually works.
Right.
You know, and early on in my career, before I really got good at doing this, we built a few systems where we'll leave a couple of those clients nameless. Yeah, where we basically just kind of did what we were told and we didn't mm-hmm. take that, you know, customer first mindset. And needless to say, those campaigns weren't really that successful.
Yeah, that is not shocking. I mean, you end up creating a solution and then going and looking for a problem for it to solve. You know what I yeah. mean? That's just not a good look for a brand.
Not at all. And there's this very key metric that a lot of times we focus on called a bounce rate. Hmm. And when you're building a website, what a bounce rate is as soon as that customer comes in, do they do anything or do they just press the back button?
Right.
You know, and if you're really not speaking to that customer's needs, that's exactly what's going to happen. You'll get them for about, you know, 3 seconds, 5 seconds later, and they're just out. You know, mm-hmm. if they don't see what they want, they'll go find it from somebody else.
10,000%. 10,000%. The Certified ANA Marketing Professional, or CAMP program, is a rigorous 35-hour online certification program developed specifically with the ANA marketer in mind. Covering the entire marketing process from brand strategy and activation to marketing implementation across digital and analytic platforms, CAMP represents the full spectrum of the marketing universe. To begin your certification, go to ana.net/campfuture. So one of the biggest things, probably the biggest thing in the industry this year, is talking like AI like it hasn't been around for 50 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of the rise of generative AI and more user-friendly platforms and people kind of really starting to wrap their head around what's possible. And in light of that, a lot of businesses are starting to think about really integrating AI on a much larger scale than perhaps they did in the past. Are there any recommendations that you'd give to a company to kind of pause before jumping into the AI world to consider before this integration even happens?
Well, I think one of the most important things for companies to keep in mind is really brand voice and how you're actually going to manage and maintain that. You know, when you really think about branding in general, the whole goal is to differentiate yourself from your competitors. Well, if every single company is using, say, ChatGPT as an example, to write their blog, and they're not really, really fixated and focused on making sure that it represents their brand voice, then the next thing you know, everybody's going to kind of sound the same. Mm-hmm. And which is kind of the antithesis of good branding. I mean, good branding, you're going to differentiate yourself and, you know, you're going to make yourself stick out, you know, amongst your peers. But if you and all your peers are kind of using the exact same thing, well, then you're not really going to stick out.
Right.
You know, so it's really a question of you figuring out how you want to represent yourself in the marketplace and then making sure that when you are using generative AI, that you've figured out how to train that generative AI to actually generate the types of content that you really want to represent your brand. And in a lot of instances, not doing that can present tremendous risks to the brand.
Good God, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine what's going to happen if you took, say, ChatGPT and you're, say, maybe you're ExxonMobil, and you decide that you're going to have ChatGPT with no customizations, you know, just kind of answering your customers' questions. You know, oof. What's going to happen when your guy asks about climate change? Is that answer really going to make you happy? Mm-hmm. Is that really going to represent your brand the way you want it represented? Or did you just get it effectively talking smack about yourself?
Yes, wearing your uniform as it does it.
Exactly, with your logo right across the chest.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point of this idea that AI is coming in a box and you just tell it to do something and it's off to the races. Like, no. Like, it is trained on the internet. Think about that for a second. You know, like that's like letting the internet, capital T, capital I, just talk on your brand's behalf. So,
yeah. It can get really, really dangerous. I mean, there's a lot of instances, you know, my attorney brought up kind of a funny one the other day where he actually got an argument with a client over generative AI because the client actually was asking ChatGPT about certain laws. But it didn't put any like geo restrictions on it.
Oh my God.
So the next thing you know, he's arguing with his client about a law, and the client is literally putting like a printout of what the law was. And the attorney's sitting there looking at it going like, oh no, that kind of looks, well, but no, that's not right. That's not actually accurate. And then he ends up finding out that it was like quoting a law from Mississippi in Santa Monica.
My God.
So, I mean, a lot of people don't realize really the power of generative AI, but they don't really necessarily know how to drive it yet. You know, it's kind of like giving a 12-year-old a car. They don't necessarily realize that they might wreck it into the wall if they're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think something that you spoke on earlier, that this just using it to use it is going to create a massive sea of sameness. I've heard people say that this kind of generative AI boom is going to usher in like a sea of mediocrity. You know, if you're just relying on the tool to do almost all of the lifting, you're going to get the most middle of the street non-disruptive, non-interesting content. Yeah, I just think that we're in for a very interesting next couple of years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, especially when you start thinking about different brands that that are on that cooler end of the spectrum. You know, how do you, you know, if you're a brand marketer for someone like, say, Virgin, you know, how do you actually manage to maintain, you know, that whole aesthetic of cool, you know, that that young, rich, charming, that that guy you wanted to go out to the bars with, you know, when you were 22, you know, how do you actually maintain that level of cool, even though it's a robot generating content? You know, we all know that a robot is not smooth.
Right. You know? Yes. That
Whereas
is something.
Virgin is like the epitome of just smooth and cool, yeah, and hip and all those fun things. And how do you actually maintain that, you know, and not just, well, sound like a robot?
Yeah, 1,000%. And I think that that is going to be kind of where you see the winners and losers in this new AI era of how you, like you said, keep that consistency while adapting these new things and leveraging what they can do for your brand. Because like you said, they're useful tools if used correctly.
I mean, yeah, I would agree. And I think one of the big things that companies really need to start thinking about is they need to start thinking about those training data sets. So the way that you're going to get ChatGPT to be cool, you know, is really about what do you allow it to learn from, you know, because when you really break it down, AI to a certain extent is kind of like a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it only really knows what you tell it and what you teach it. And you can actually sandbox what it learns from into just this kind of little area. And so, sticking with the Virgin example, if you've got, you know, maybe 1,000 blog entries that you've been generating over the last 5 years that are all, you know, speaking in that cool hip voice, well, you've got a beautiful data set that you can now pipe into it to train it. And that's really how you're going to get it to actually sound like you and to be cool. Like, don't let the internet train your robots.
No, for goodness
sake. Make sure that when you're training it, that you're actually doing it with the data that represents your company and it sounds like your company, and it's sourcing out of your CRM systems where it's going to be able to know the answers for your company. And just make sure that you're really doing a good job of thinking ahead of, you know, how are you teaching your child?
Yeah.
You know, again, it's kind of the best analogy I've been able to come up with.
Yeah. And I love it because that's where I've seen the magic happen, is when you confine it to a data set that you own and have curated, then that kind of ability to process and think of all of the possible existing scenarios, it can really do some impressive stuff. But yeah, to your point, it's like teaching your child via Reddit. Like, really? Yeah. You really want to do that?
Like, with all the craziness that you'll find on Reddit, you can only imagine what's going to come out of it.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
A really good example, that's a practical example that's kind of out in the marketplace these days, is a friend of mine created a company called CityBot.
Mm.
And what they're actually doing is they're going around city to city and they're kind of integrating into a lot of cities' 411 services. And so what they're doing is they're limiting that training data set to be only the types of content that will help you in your city. You know, that way, if you are, say, for example, I know one of their clients is up in Oakland. So they'll actually feed in all the information about the garbage man, all the information about, like, how do I go get a permit to add my, you know, my porch in the backyard or whatever, mm-hmm, you know, but they limit that data set just to the different things that are contained within that city. You know, that way, when the general public is asking it, you know, hey, where do I go get a permit, you know, to build the addition on my house, that it's referencing only that data about Oakland. It's not actually gonna, you know, give you quotes from Alabama and, you know, Texas and,
right,
you know, all these other places that just simply aren't relevant, you, mm-hmm, know? So companies just really need to start thinking about how they're actually going to do that. And how are they going to generate all that content? How are they going to curate it? And how are they going to make sure, and this is the important part, that all of that training data is brand safe?
Yeah. Oh my goodness, yeah. And I love that idea for the city bot. I feel like it could be a foundation to really build as AI's capabilities continue to evolve. I think that starting there with creating data interactive databases city by city, I think that's just a foundation for a lot of cool possibilities.
It really is. And I mean, think of the amount of cost savings that cities are going to be able to leverage on that too. I mean, I don't have any stats for you right now, but I mean, you can just close your eyes and imagine what that's going to do to like call volumes. You know, it's just going to drop it so low, and it's going to make things so much more efficient. And chances are, you know, once you give that data to the algorithm, it's probably going to have a better answer than some of those customer service reps could as well. You know, once you get it properly trained.
So I'd like to shift a little bit and get your perspective as a founder, as an entrepreneur in who's, you know, very well versed in both the tech space and the brand and marketing space. You've just got a very unique kind of melange of experience, and I'd like to tap into that for a second if you're cool with that. In earlier conversations, we were kind of talking about how in the previous tech booms, it's really the person with the absolute best mousetrap that's going to get the best talent. You know, when we're talking from an engineer technical standpoint, that is typically how it's going to overwhelmingly go. But do you have advice for challenger tech brands that aren't far and away best in class technology-wise to still attract top-tier talent? Because I think there is usefulness and a need for competitiveness, and I don't like the stratification going that quickly. So how can challenger tech brands kind of stand up to the behemoths in our industry?
Well, I'd have to say probably one of the most important things is building a good corporate culture and making sure that every single person inside of your organization really just likes each other and that they're just friends. You know, one of the probably best ways I've found to actually recruit talent is through my employees' friends. And I don't know as much about how a lot of other people look at the world, but to me, you know, I look at the world through a lens of Buddhism, you know, and I always want to do everything I can to help as many people around me as I possibly can. And what I don't want to do is hurt anyone around me. So if I'm in an organization and I'm someone's employee, and I'm really, really excited, and my life is going really, really good. I go to work and I have fun, and I like all the people that I work with. And every day, I'm not like, oh man, I gotta go to work now. This is gonna suck. You know, like you don't wanna have that kind of a mindset. You wanna be like, yeah, dude, I'm gonna go into work and I'm gonna solve some cool problems, and I'm gonna get this new puzzle today, and it's gonna be great. And the people I'm working with are all smart, and they're gonna help me, and everything's gonna be awesome. Well, when people have that attitude, they share it with their friends. And then their friends are like, you know, my job kind of sucks. And, you know, I kind of want what you've got, bro. You know, I really, you know, every day you're telling me about how fun it is to go to work. Well, maybe I want to go to work with you.
1,000%.
Have some fun. Maybe I can actually enjoy myself at work instead of just, you know, dreading going to the office. So I think corporate culture is a big one. I think another big one is making sure that you empower your employees, you know, and making sure that you're really giving them the ability to do their job, and you're trusting them and you're empowering them and you're making them feel valued and you're making them feel like their contributions really, really do matter. I mean, there's nothing more demoralizing than coming to work and just having your boss be like, rah, 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 do this. And you're sitting there going, when did I become like a robot myself? You know, people, those great minds, they want to be set free. You know, they don't want to be put in a box. So I don't know. I think those are probably the two most important things, or at least that I've found that have worked for me.
Love that. Absolutely love that. And yeah, and that's that thing of like, You hired me for my expertise. Do you not even want to hear what I do in your position? I think that there's so many things to do, but missing that element is a huge, huge, huge detriment to your business.
Yeah, that was definitely something that I learned kind of as I started managing people more and more and more, is I really learned that when I made 100% of the decisions, it made it so that the ideas were coming just out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a smart guy, but I'm not actually as smart as the collective of the people that I surround myself with.
1,000,000%.
You know, my executive creative director, Ish, I mean, he knows things about marketing and branding and design that I will never, ever be as good as he is at. And so when I have challenges or problems, I need to go tap into his brain. And if I'm only taking my ideas, well, then I just like lost out on someone that's just straight up better than me, you know, in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my lead architects, Niels, I will never be as good at software as Niels. It's just never going to happen. I'm good at what I do. Niels is better. You know, so I want to make sure to surround myself with those people that are better than me, and then kind of source their ideas, put them together, package them up, and then give them to the client.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm never going to be smarter than the team will be, or at least not if I build the team correctly.
Love that. I love that. And that actually kind of dovetails into my next question. You already gave a lot of great advice, but looking back at your own journey with Stauffer, what is one lesson or insight that stands out that you'd want to share with budding entrepreneurs or people getting into the marketing business space?
Ooh, one idea. I'd probably have to say the most important idea that I would share with people is to just read more. Is honestly just read more and become a perpetual student, you know, more than anything. I mean, early on in my career, the types of things I was doing, they're all completely irrelevant now. All of the engineering things that I did at 20, you know, or in the year 2000, the year 2002, it's all irrelevant. A lot of the marketing tactics and techniques that existed around the year 2000, I don't want to say they're irrelevant, you know, but they're really getting eclipsed now by all of these new changes. And so just, you know, kind of being that ever evolving student that's just constantly going out and reading books all the time, listening to podcasts all the time, read the tech news every single morning for an hour, read marketing news every morning for an hour, and just be a constant sponge.
Yeah.
Just sucking up as much knowledge from as many different places as you possibly can. I think that's probably key, you know, especially for someone like me that's in the tech space, because I mean, every day some guy's coming up with some new revolutionary concept that you're going to be in that meeting with the client and they're going to ask you about it. And you don't want to just kind of sit there going,
that's a great question. Yeah.
I'm going to get back to you on that, sir.
I'm going to ask ChatGPT in an hour. Don't worry about it. Yeah,
exactly.
So before we move on to some questions that we ask all of our guests, if people want to know more about your agency Stauffer or about what you, Chris, are up to, where can they find that on the interwebs?
I'd probably say going to Stauffer.com is probably the easiest place to see that information. We do post a decent amount of content there lately. Something we're finally getting around to doing is actually publishing a lot of the ideas we've got. We've been posting a lot of content lately about AI specifically. I think the AI really does have a lot to, it's going to be an interesting time. I really do think that we're right on the edge of that wave starting to swell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not really ready for a lot of customers yet. Heavy emphasis on the word yet.
Yep.
But slowly but surely that is starting to happen. And so I'd say go check out our blog. It's probably the best place to find information.
Love that. Stauffer.com. And yeah, and I think that this is, you know, I think about this a lot because I'm a resident shiny object guy. that I'm actually kind of grateful that the metaverse kind of, I don't want to say it jumped the shark, but it jumped the gun about being the center conversation in the world of marketing. I'm glad that they came up the year before AI did, because it's a kind of, it allows you to compare a bit to, like, this is what a blip feels like and this is what a sea change feels like.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, a couple of my buddies were actually the ones that created the virtual reality Burning Man project.
Oh, wow.
And it was really fun. And, you know, there was a period during, during the pandemic where I was kind of stuck at home with the wife and kids and there was literally nothing to do. And, you know, those friends kind of got me into it. And, you know, I went out and bought the Oculus headset and started playing around. And I started looking up all this stuff about, you know, developing metaverse worlds and all that stuff. And what I couldn't get over is after I'd have that headset on for about an hour or two, my face hurt.
Yeah. Yes.
And I know that sounds like such a weird thing to be a problem, but like,
it's real.
It goes back to that customer experience.
Yes. Yes.
You know, as a customer, you know, like, I'm a huge nerd, so I totally get off on going and playing with new tech nerd toys and stuff. Like, it's, yeah, you know, always what I'm doing. I'm constantly playing around with new tech. And I remember sitting there, you know, playing in that space for like 2-3 hours at a time. And then I take the headset off and I got this big ring around my face, you know, and my face literally hurt. And I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, if they don't solve this face problem, I'm not going to go in there. And I start seeing all these people writing about, like, oh my God, we're going to be like doing meetings in here. And we're going to be here all day. And I started thinking to myself, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a moment.
Yeah. If you're going to introduce it with work meetings, are you kidding me? Like, this is the Pandora or the Trojan horse you think's going to. Yeah.
Yeah, and I, it was even kind of bothering me, and I was there for fun.
Yeah.
Like, I was screwing around with my buddies that I wanted to hang out with, you know, and even that was, like, a little challenging. Now mix that in with, like, work? Oh, God.
Yeah.
That just sounds bad. You know, maybe once the new glasses come out and they really improve that customer experience, you know, maybe it's still got some promise, but it's not there yet.
No. No, AI is much more worth your time, and learning a little bit more on Stauffer.com about it seems like a great place to start.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are starting to see stuff for AI already. I mean, the concept of, like, document recognition and data extraction technologies, I mean, those things are just, that's already here. You know, companies are already starting to see massive efficiencies, you know, in that space. And, you know, the people talk all the time about where do we think jobs are going to start disappearing? Well, I can tell you right now, without the slightest hesitation in my voice, if you fill out forms for a living, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Because AI there. Can fill out forms better than you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And a hell of a lot quicker.
Yep.
All right, my friend, I'm going to leave that there, and we're going to pivot to some more general questions we ask all of our guests. This first one is open by design. Chris, what are your thoughts on diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Well, I do think DEI is a very important space. One of our favorite clients is a gentleman named Dr. Sean Harper that runs the University of Southern California's Race and Equity Center. You can find out more information about their site at race.usc.edu. Luckily, since I'm in the software space, DEI is something that it's just omnipresent. You know, I think we've got people in the firm right now from 8 different countries of origin.
That's awesome.
You know, which, yeah, I mean, software in general, I joke with people all the time. It's got to be the worst profession in the world, you know, for a racist person, because it's like completely unavoidable. You know, I mean, we've literally got every color of the rainbow. And if you aren't that guy hiring every color of the rainbow, you're not going to have enough engineers.
No.
It's just that simple.
I love that. And that is actually, and you just think about it, as software is one of the most burgeoning, innovative, new things. That is not, those two things aren't a coincidence, I would say.
No, I don't think it is, you know, and I think that diversity of ideas and of thoughts and inputs, it really is one of the things that's, you know, kind of made Silicon Valley magical. You know, I mean, they literally do tap literally the world's best and brightest. You know, it's not just, you know, the old boys club coming up with those ideas. It's the entire planet coming up with those ideas, and they all come to Software Mecca effectively.
All right, this is either the easiest or hardest question we ask on the pod. So let's see what it is today. Christopher, CEO and founder of the Stauffer Agency. What is your favorite album of all time and why?
I would actually say Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
Woo! I love it.
Yeah, the reason why I would say that is because, you know, to me, true artistry is coming up with something unique, something that doesn't necessarily sound like everyone else sounds. And I don't know about you, but I've never really heard anyone that was even close to sounding like Pink Floyd.
No, especially in that album.
Especially in that album. And it's just like, you know, I was fortunate enough, my wife and I got to go see Roger Waters in the Crypto Arena recently.
Oh, wow.
And it was just, it was a great show. And I had such a good time. And it just, you know, everything about them was just amazing. I mean, although I don't always agree with his political views, listening to his political views are fascinating. They really are. And he really, or at least Roger Waters anyways, really always has been someone that's kind of pushed the envelope, you know, in that space. And again, I've never heard an artist that has ever sounded like him. And I honestly think, you know, 200 years from now, much like I might listen to Tchaikovsky, people are still going to be listening to Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And honestly, I think now I'd have to look back. This might make Dark Side of the Moon the most popular answer in the history of Marketing Futures Pod. I mean, that's still like four people, but still, in asking any album in the history of music, what's your favorite? That is the most popular answer. And I mean, I think because it's such a great one. And I would say that is such a singular work of art. That it makes sense that it's so many people's favorites. So fantastic answer. Couldn't agree with you more on how unique and just it holds its own space in the music world, which is not something you could say about even great works of art.
No, I mean, we've been spending the whole day talking about branding. You know, you want to talk about someone that differentiated themselves?
Yeah.
Pink Floyd.
Yes, absolutely. So let's bring it up to the present. Is there something you're listening to now, whether it's an artist, a song, a podcast, maybe a book? What's getting you excited nowadays and why?
So one of the things about me, I just really love to think about, you know, different ideas and concepts and stuff like that. And psychology has always really interested me a lot. You know, being in the marketing space, obviously it is to a certain extent applied psychology, you know, in many references. And
1000%.
I completely accidentally ran across on Spotify this guy named Morgan Housel. And I really got into his podcast. And his podcast really talks about money and the psychology of money. I mean, what really made him famous was he wrote a book called The Psychology of Money, which I plan on reading very, very soon. But he just has he basically waxes philosophy of, you know, in his podcast about, you know, how money affects you as a person, how you should look at money, how you should treat money, you know, what it's good for, what it's not good for, you know, and different things like that. And it really has, you know, spoken to me a lot. You know, one of the examples that I'd kind of give to your listeners is he talks about in there about how he spent some time as an investment banker. and how he was working like, you know, 100, 120 hours a week, and he was making so much money, but yet his life was miserable because all he did was work. And even though he was rich and had all this money, it really meant nothing because he didn't really have any time to enjoy it, you know? And for me, early on in my career, I wasn't doing 120 hour weeks all the time, but I was doing 80 hour weeks quite frequently, you know, early on in my career, that was pretty normal for me, you know? And it really comes down to what you actually value. And for me right now, what I value is spending time with my two young children. You know, I've got a 3.5-year-old and a 5.5-year-old. And that's the kind of thing that Morgan talks about in his podcast, is you really aligning your life towards what your life's goals are, and that money isn't necessarily everything. You know, money should be there. It should serve a purpose, but you shouldn't sacrifice the rest of your life for it. And yeah, he's got a whole lot of just amazing things that'll really just kind of make you think and make you really evaluate your own personal goals. And I don't know, I've just found it, you know, very enlightening, and it twisted my brain in ways that it hadn't been twisted before.
Fantastic. And is the podcast called The Psychology of Money?
Yeah, it's just called the Morgan Housel Podcast.
All right.
That's what I thought. But yeah, the book, because after I got hooked on him, you know, listening to it for a bit, I then was like, you know, who is this dude? You know, how did he manage to make it up in like the top five in Spotify? You know, why does he matter? And that was when I actually found out that he had, you know, written a book on the psychology of money.
Well, that is fantastic. You've got your weekend listening recommendations, everybody. Chris, thank you so, so much. This has been an incredible conversation. It has been a pleasure to have you as a guest on the Marketing Futures Podcast. Thanks for listening to the Marketing Futures Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and that you'll join us in 2 weeks when the podcast returns to the Masters of Marketing Conference with special guests from Barclay and Planet Fitness. The Marketing Futures Podcast airs Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. Have a topic or guest you'd like to hear on the show? Shoot us a note at marketingfutures@ana.net. And as always, prepare your business for the future of marketing at ana.net/futures.
This has been a presentation of the ANA Podcast Network, powered by Audacy.